Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me as usual in the studios of CBS Interactive, Fleischmann Hillard's VP of Digital Media, Scott Rohde.
Hey, Tim.
And our guest today is Triple M and Sky News' Paul Murray.
Gentlemen, hello and hello to everyone downloading right now.
This week, Nova's Teddy in the Blender ad gets the boot. Are Australian newspapers really perfectly positioned for the future? Why Are You OK Day is significant for the media industry? Shaggy's Foursquare birthday in Sydney. Michael Pell takes the helm at Sunrise. And Kerri-Ann Kennelly enters Controversy Corner. First, we turn to Paul Murray, the busiest man in broadcasting. Afternoons on Triple M, evenings on Sky News. Which actually is the easier to do, radio or telly?
Not talk to my wife is generally the easier one. Look, I love the radio, and I actually think that the radio is harder to do because there's frankly more time to fill, like doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday drive in Sydney only, 3-hour shows. It's basically 1 hour less, even in those 3 days, than every other drive show around, so you've still got to do a week's worth of work.
And I guess it's just coming back and getting the momentum again when you come in.
Well, and it's also two very sort of different styles. Like, you know, obviously one is, forgive me for putting the explicit warning here on the iTunes podcast, but it's, you know, the shits and giggles thing, which is great and which is what I really love and what I love listening to on the radio, versus obviously the more serious stuff at Sky News. That said, I've never really thought of myself as a TV guy. I think we can, if you've ever seen a photo of me, you'll know, and you gentlemen can now see it, the 110 kilos. Yeah,
that's why both Tim and I are on podcast.
Yeah, let's
well.
Put it this way. I'm one of us that has somehow made it into the TV world, so I'm expecting to be yanked off at any time. So, you know, I love both.
And I guess with radio, I remember somebody saying to me that the thing about a good radio show, a good city radio show, is it could only go out on that day in that city. Is that how you try and do it?
100%. And that's the bit that makes radio particularly tough. That's not saying that TV's a doddle, quite the opposite. But, you know, I try to start with a blank page every day, and you try to literally figure out, okay, not that wanky, what's everyone talking about? But, you know, what stands out?
Yeah.
What's a funny way of dealing with it? And then what's something that's, you know, because a big thing about radio and FM is that you've sort of got to create your own world. So sometimes it has nothing to do with the paper and you're talking about something out of your own life. And sometimes your life is a little bit boring. So that's what makes it fun. But I'm completely subscribed to that idea, which makes it an absolute bugger when they turn around and say, oh, you guys are going on holidays. Got any best of bits? Well, there's a few chats about Christina Keneally that we could turn around, but I don't think they really stand up in September.
Well, you've done some good political studies. The one that left out for me was the delivering the porn to Parliament. Was that was probably the most talked about this year, I guess.
Bought the porn.
Well, this is the thing. Can I reveal the truth of the porn stuff?
Please don't tell me it was just empty boxes of paper.
Well, somewhat. Is that what we did was is that, you know, obviously when Fred Nile was being exposed as potentially looking at, was it 200,000? And adult images
for
something.
Research.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Google Images, or you click on Google Images button, that could give you like 800 right away, yeah, you know? Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, if that's research, then I'm an associate professor. You know, I'm a very learned man. Now, the thing is, so we thought, okay, well, you know, what's the best thing to do? And obviously, we thought, oh, well, you know, let's go and buy some, you know, boxes of old-fashioned adult material that means you can look and read and watch and see in the privacy of your own, you know, life, but there's no digital trail. It's the way they used to. It's the way that Neville Rand did it in the 80s.
Yep.
You know, it's the way that Malcolm Fraser did it before. You know, this is the type of stuff that Gough liked. Obviously, I'm just throwing that out there with no evidence whatsoever, but it's the internet. You can do that. And so we thought, bugger it. Let's get to 4 giant boxes of porn and drop them off to Parliament. Now, what they were, in actual fact, was they were 4 boxes of envelopes that we had taken from the stationery cupboard, and you just put the word porn on the box, or just write XXX on the box. Anyway, so we turned up at Parliament.
With a couple of cameras as well,
I think. Exactly, with a megaphone and carrying on, you know, free porn for New South Wales, you know, get your jollies without losing your job, all of that very, you know,
classy,
cutting political satire, that's what I can say. And we dropped it off, and the security guards were all quite bemused and sort of, you know, we thought, oh, wow, it's a little chaser moment. That's great. And it was fun. Anyway, we've gone back after filming it and got the attention that we required. And the security guards, who are kind of a bit annoyed at all of this, because what we did have was, despite the fact that they were three boxes of envelopes, we had bought about half a dozen adult magazines that were leaning out of the top of it. So they've thought, pay dirt. They've said, sorry, sir, we're going to have to confiscate these. So they actually took from us these three boxes, and we're sort of, you know, pissing ourselves, because quite obviously, this isn't the pay dirt that they think. The scariest thing of all was when we got back to the office, we had stolen the one of the trolleys from the receptionist, and the receptionist was really annoyed because it was her personal trolley that she had bought from Kennard's Hire.
You don't mess with receptionists.
No, yeah. And Barb is the biggest uncredited legend in the history of Triple M. She's been there for 30 years,
and she's
literally
not going to forgive you easily.
No, not quite. So this is my very public I love you, Barb.
Excellent. And do you, for your, the thing I always think with these big stunts is, you have to go along, you have to be a personality, you have to be quite cheeky and do that sort of thing. Yeah. Is that your natural personality, or no, do you have to be a different version of Paul Murray when you do something?
Yeah,
like that?
To be incredibly honest, I don't like doing them because I don't have that much front. Mm. I'm your typical person behind a microphone where it's great when it's just you in a room, but I'm a coward. And also I don't like making people feel that awkward.
Yeah, I remember when I used to be a journalist at the Sun newspaper in the UK. Mm. And we had to do an incident where, was it Two Jags or was it, who was the guy that punched?
Prescott was the one who punched.
John Prescott, that's who it was, and punched this farmer guy.
He
was throwing
an egg at him, though.
Yeah, and then John Prescott punched him. So the next day, he's in Scotland, and me and two of my other journalists get told by the editor we have to dress up as boxers with boxing gloves on. Sun t-shirts, sun hats, and then we have to challenge Prescott to a fight. I've got Sky News pointing at me here, I've got CNN pointing at me there, and the three of us are shouting at Prescott, and then they come up and said this, come up to interviews, and they're like, so are you guys real boxers? No, we're journalists from the Sun.
And it's always that moment too, because, you know, like, mum doesn't see or hear anything you do on the radio, but that's the one that she does.
Yeah.
And that's the one where she turns around and says, well, I just wish you'd do more of the serious stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yes, I understand. But
so she's proud of you for the Sky News.
Yes,
Sky News
very much. But somehow won't connect to pay television, which I don't quite understand why. I said, Mum, you know, fair enough.
It's a way of seeing you every day then, isn't
yeah,
it?
Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't have to call her awesome. But no, it's that thing where the type of radio that I like doing with Rachel Corbett, Rach, on Triple M I'm trying to avoid all the obvious wanky cliches that anyone who's ever sat here and talked about radio about, it's just two friends talking. Oh, kill me. It's just two friends talking. And like she genuinely is my best mate. And that's the same thing that, you know, I loved about Merrick and Rosso, or the thing I love about Hamish and Andy, is when two people actually like each other, you know, not the radio arranged marriage and go forth and be hilarious, you can tell the difference.
Well,
and
you've done Breakfast as well, haven't you? I mean, one of my first rate, I've been in Australia, I think 4 years this week, actually. Yeah. So I used to listen when I first moved in. The only two things I could pick up were ABC Illawarra, which is odd because I was in Central Sydney. It's obviously just everything lined up, and the Shebang.
Oh, well.
Which I think at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think at the time it was Fifi Martin, and the person at the time who I must confess I used to think of as the other one.
Yes. Well, actually, it's funny you say that. And look, can I formally apologise for that year of my life? Not my choice, but when the boss says, hey, get in the middle of it, fair enough. What do you do?
You were the one who sort of had to kind of keep the train on the track and make things run to time.
Yeah, which was just shit house. Like, it was, you know, there's a whole bunch of things written and said about that time. And it was the toughest year of my life, professionally and personally, not because of anyone involved in it. It's just, you know, like, I'm a radio nerd. Mm. This is actually all I've ever wanted to do. And just like, you know, a kid who knows they want to play cricket for their country. And that's fostered, and they love it from when they're six all the way through to when they get the chance to do it. I was genuinely a little nerdy kid who desperately wanted to be on the radio. And, you know, working at the Westride News Agency every morning from 6 to 9, I deliberately worked that shift to listen to Andrew Denton's breakfast show. So to have the chance to do the Triple M Sydney breakfast show, well, that's the goal that you wanted in the most bastardised way possible, which was, it was somebody else's party and it was over. But please go in and try and do something. And, you know, I wasn't at all, well, I'm still not, a known entity to people. So it was tough. It was really tough. And I'm not, there's nothing I really regret about that year in terms of the way I played it or the personality stuff. It's just, you know, I'd love to get the chance I'm loving the chance to do it on my terms with somebody that I like in a way that I like, and that's actually empowering. And I know it's a very public suck up, but I've got to thank Dobbo particularly, because after that shithouse year, he had every right to put me in a cannon and fire me in the direction where everyone else goes. But he said, no, you know, I asked you to do it, and I back your ability. So it's been fun to get the chance to do it again.
What's it like when the ratings come in?
Shithouse. It's terrible. It's just
even now, where you're sort of going okay.
Tim, how the question to you then would be: how do you feel when your ratings are never read?
It's not the same, is it? Fortunately for me.
The hardest thing about anything is about these things is, and we've been talking about it a bit ahead of the commercial radio conference, is that I'll be chairing a panel that's going to have lots of Hall of Fame people in it that have really had huge success running radio stations from 2SM to Nova, John Laws, all of those guys. And in the pre-discussions with all of them, the one question that I've been wanting to ask all of them, and I will be asking, is content enough? And I don't necessarily know that it is anymore. I live in a bit of a fool's paradise that it might be. And that's what makes ratings day particularly hard, is that for 5 weeks you got up, you tried to come up with the best idea you could and execute it the best way you could. I'm genuinely never lazy about shows. Like, I don't go, it's just 2 weeks to holidays, who gives a shit? It's not my gear at all. But it's really frustrating when you turn around and, because we do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I get a chance to listen to everyone else on Monday and Friday. And I genuinely believe that we're as competitive as anyone else. I certainly think we're better than one of the big shows that is around. And I go, well, surely, if we're working our ass off and it feels good to us and all of the reasons that when you're a six-year-old kid it's ticking the boxes of why it works, when the numbers come in and they're not what you want, you go, what do you have to do?
And the big show that you feel you're better with, is this one that's actually doing okay in the ratings? They're doing okay numbers, if it's the one that I'm thinking of.
Yes. No. It's not the ultimate one. It's the one near it.
The drive show, I listened to WSFM drive show the other day, with John O'Coleman. And
yeah, John O'Donnell.
It's absolutely bullshit. It's so annoying. I got into it and then they just talk for what seems like forever.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I can't take this crap.
Yeah, but they last time around they had a good ratings trip.
Yeah, exactly. Look, is that, and I've realised the hole that I've dug myself by saying as generically as well, it's another drive show. Is that, I'm not going to specifically name any show, but because
I agree with Scott, by the way. I don't hear it very often.
No, but I won't leave you hanging, though, which is that the type of radio that does shit me, and a lot of other shows do it at breakfast, at drive, and everywhere else, is sort of overtly lazy, overtly patronising, and overtly self-indulgent.
Yeah.
And I think that the radio that I loved about, say, American Rosso was the stunts were one thing, but when they got their audience on, the callers were telling that one story that they've dined out on for their whole life.
Yeah.
So that's fine. Fill that show with people saying, "Oh, I'll never this." There's this one. This one time I got shot, and then I ran down the street, and then all of that stuff. And that's exactly the type of caller interaction that Rach and I try to do. And basically, our theory is pretty simple, which is that we try to, rather than saying, finding the most generic thing to talk about, like, "Oh, what did you think of TV last night?" Yeah. We try to turn around and literally say, okay, is there anyone listening? Because we've always wanted to know this. Is there anyone listening who's been struck by lightning twice? 4 people rang.
Really?
On the day when Brett Michaels had the brain aneurysm, now generally nothing sort of happens. And okay, well, what's the high wire act? Okay, 133353, give us a call. Is there a single person in Sydney listening who has ever survived a brain aneurysm? 3 people called. One talked about their dad, one talked about their kid, and one actually talked about themselves. So just think about the maths there of a city, of a station, of a time slot, of a time, and willing to call. And that's what's awesome. So back into the ratings question. I mean, if you're doing that and you're getting and you've got an audience that can be as specific as that and as passionate as that, and it turns around and you don't rate 24, you go, shit, what do you have to do?
Marketing comes in then, doesn't it? Yeah. And of course, the thing is, big network, two stations in any given city, breakfast will usually take priority. You're going to be a long way down the line in terms of the sort of marketing support you're going to get.
So my theory has always been that, look, we know our place in the food chain. That's the whole thing. That we know that certainly in terms of Triple M, they have to make the grill team work. I mean, when the breakfast show rates, everything else works. And that's difficult when you're creatively wanting to go off and say, yeah, but look what we're doing. But the reality of the way it works is that's if breakfast rates, everything else goes okay. And so you know that's where the TV ads are going to go. It gets a bit frustrating when you sort of don't get the amount of promos internally. Yeah. But again, that's you got to sell the breakfast show. But the thing we try to do, and we did a thing couple of weeks ago, like you'll hear a lot of people talking about radio, about talkability, which is such a wanky, bizarre.
I'm with you all the way.
It's nonsense term that I've just gone, what is this crap? I don't get it. I don't understand.
It's like and readability.
They,
I mean,
yeah. And you sort of, and you're just nodding because you think it's something you should do.
Tim, readability is when people get the spelling and their punctuation right.
Mate, I always say spell. we've been crowdsourcing spell checks since 2008.
And the talkability thing is that, you know, normally it's, oh, do a big stunt and everyone will start ringing their friends saying, oh, you know, quick, tune in and have a listen. I think for us, when we're doing a three-day-a-week drive show, talkability and getting noticed is doing little things that look cool on the web. So you just turn around and, like, the porn stunt, it becomes a 90-second video. And I think in this era, The way you tell people about radio shows isn't, oh, did you hear 10 past 7? We've all known that the most important words you strive for in anything is have a look at this.
Yeah.
You know, in uppercase, sent to your mates.
And send the YouTube link and they're all going to watch it.
Exactly.
90 seconds is a key as well, 60 to 90 seconds.
Exactly. And that's basically what we're trying to do. So basically, like, something we try to do a lot of is sort of Twaudio stuff, a lot of Twitter audio of not here's our full interview with Spider Everett, Here's the bit where he talked about Kerri-Anne Kennelly. Yeah.
Well, let me ask another question in the meantime. Sky News, I presume you've got to sell the idea to your stereo bosses that actually you're also going to be preparing for a live TV show four nights a week.
Yes.
And presumably one of the reasons for doing that is building awareness.
Yeah, yes. They love it. Like, when I was doing only a Friday night version of the show, they loved it. They loved it because it's a different type of talking about the news show, is that what generally has been what's generally happened to this point is the only people allowed to talk about the news are people deep into their 50s who are very pompous and very definite about things like social issues and crime and have a very clear conservative political perspective. I go in from the generation that's watched Bill Maher and Jon Stewart and the Chaser, and not taking the piss, just going, you know what, I actually don't care about graffiti.
But that's the question. Would a Jon Stewart type show, he's the guy who does The Daily Show, would that work in Australia, do you think?
Absolutely not. The reason is because for The Daily Show specifically, you know, there are 300 million people. There is a very hotly contested Congress with a House and Senate. There are 50 states, which means 50 state governments. Yep. There is a very partisan system, and their entire politics is full of extremes.
Yeah, so Australia's this bland, flaccid pile of crap.
Well, so you sort of get the thing where, you know, I think there's a little space for political satire, absolutely. But also we have to remember that as awesome as The Daily Show and Colbert is, it's watched by about 1.4 million people in America. Yeah. So the audience...
I think Jon Stewart's show is, The Daily Show is watched more outside of America than inside America.
Well, see, so then you get to the point where it's like, okay, I mean, imagine a Jon Stewart show in Australia that would rate 1/300th of the entire country, and that's where you get something like Newstopia, which I think was a belter of a show, and I think it still should be there. But any idea that it's going to do huge numbers is very much not it. But in answer to your actual question about the Triple M profile thing, is yeah, they like it. But I mean, you do have to admit it's a slightly confused profile that I'm putting out there, where on the radio it's a very sort of adult offering and sort of wild and sillier, and obviously a little more staid on Sky News. But that said, I think people can handle
it.
Well,
it's worth talking about your background. I mean, you came up the journalistic route, though, didn't it?
Yeah.
Wikipedia tells me two things about you that I didn't know before.
Well, this is very thorough.
One of which was that you were
Wikipedia, Tim. How many times have I told you?
According to Wikipedia, you were Radio Reporter of the Year in 2002.
Correct.
And you sometimes have a beard and never have more than 9 toes.
Yes, very true.
Maybe explain both of those points in either order.
At the moment.
I do have a beard. No, Yes, the beard came and went for many years, the early 2000s.
Well, I should say one of the it's also worth declaring an interest in that I occasionally pop up on your Sky News thing where I always fear that I look like I've come second in a Paul Murray lookalike competition. But...
I'm sorry about that. Is it? No. I love having a beard.
I have no words about that one. I'm sorry.
I love having a beard because it means I don't have to lose weight.
And the nine toes.
Well, the nine toes is absolutely correct, which is when I was 10.
We're looking at right now at four toes and one foot.
There you go. When I was 10, my foot got crushed on the back of a truck that my dad was driving. They had to amputate and I had to learn to walk again. And there you go. Nine and a bit toes.
I'd imagine your dad felt bad about that.
It gets brought up occasionally.
It can be awkward.
Just towards Christmas.
It's a good one for Festivus, isn't it? The sharing of the grudges. And the radio reports of the year 2002. So that was the Sydney bushfires, I think, was one of the...
The ambition was very, very clear, which is that, you know, I desperately wanted to be... Andrew Denton was the mark. Andrew Denton, I wanted to be hopefully regarded as clever, not funny, because as soon as you get the expectation of funny out there, it's, you know, dance monkey dance. I liked funny to be sort of more accidental. But it's an impossible path. You know, how do you get there? So Jason Morrison is a key player in all of this. Jason Morrison at 2GB, who's their drive announcer. I bumped into him at a community radio station. And I sort of ended up hanging out with him. I eventually became a reporter. And the coolest thing about being a radio reporter is the false life experience it gave you. By 21, I'd literally been in the Prime Minister's office and I'd seen somebody shot dead in Lakemba. So slowly but surely, you end up having all of these different experiences that when I went to Nova and I was a news reporter there and I was desperately going, okay, I want to do a show. And I'm trying to try and do the my version of the Tony Martin sketches, which were all nonsense. I sort of did a fake news show. So you use your news experience to try and show comedic ability. And that's where it went off. And now the chance to come back and do comment and observation is great, because the whole thing about the Sky News show that I love very, very much is I do like being a forceful person on television, but not necessarily an opinionated one. I like being somebody who just kind of calls BS.
Yeah.
And I like
to... That's what you need sometimes, though.
But also, I don't think we talk enough about the motivation of politics. Rather, all we end up doing is arguing the toss in it. And I think it's important to turn around and go, no, hang on, whoa. Why is the Prime Minister being patronising right now?
Yeah.
Why is Tony Abbott not getting involved in the fight? And that's why I think the Sky Show is starting to work.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Andrew Denton a couple of times. I was actually going to ask, who of your peers do you kind of respect?
Oh, no, well, Denton, well and truly, and in reference to all of that Logies business, I agree with him both in and out of context. He's spectacular. The things he did on the radio I really enjoyed. I really, really, really like... I listen to a lot of American radio, so I sort of listen to a lot of Ron and Fez is this satellite radio show, which is pretty wild and crazy and just like so over the top.
And you can find that as a podcast, can you?
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to find, and I don't know whether you can get it legally. I have a subscription, but unless you have that, they're really cool. I really like. There's a lot of behind the scenes people that are sort of rather boring to talk about, but I really like Hadley. I do think that that type of talkback radio is really exciting to listen to, and I have incredible respect for Darren Hinch. Mm. A lot of people, it's very easy to turn around and talk about these AM guys as if they're sort of extreme right wing, you know, nutters. They're not. It's not like the Rush Limbaugh sort of socially conservative. I like that these guys turn around and go, I have a very definite opinion. I'm going to go off and research it, and if I've got the balls, I'll go out on the air and give it a good whack, which I think is really cool. Yeah. I think it's really cool.
So, but the moment somebody mentions Rush Limbaugh, I automatically go to the Bill Hicks sketch about him.
Yes!
Which I won't mention on it right now because it's way obscene, but yeah. The time, listen to Bill Hicks talking about Rush Limbaugh.
Even for iTunes explicit.
Yeah.
Well, next up, we talk cruelty to teddy bears. So Nova has pulled an ad for its Merrick Dawes and Ricky Lee breakfast show after an animal cruelty complaint. It featured a teddy bear in a blender that...
Big puppy dog eyes staring at you and then blend.
So well, you think it did look like a dog?
It did.
Because I disagree. I don't think it did.
Well, imagine you flick to that channel, miss the start of it, and then you just see this pair of eyes and blend. There you're going to see what looks like a dog being blended.
Didn't go red, did it? It's a fur colour.
I'm quite glad it didn't go red. That would be even worse. Look, I can understand why the person complained, because it might give kids ideas to put things in blenders, like maybe dogs.
Yeah, that's the worry, isn't it? You get the copycat. But Paul, publicity stunt?
No. When I first saw it, I thought, this is a good idea. I mean, maybe I'm on the wrong side of it, is that I've gone, oh, you know, this is a funny idea and a nice way of repackaging a pretty old school radio idea, which is, what will you give up for? Now, it could be State of Origin tickets. In this case, it's going to be money. And, you know, there are, you know, like anything, there's only a limited number of ideas, and it's how you come up with the way to package it. Yeah. I thought it was a fairly clever way of doing it. That said, I mean, I'm surprised. I'm always very surprised at how soon after things get launched, they get pulled. I don't quite understand why the process of filing a complaint doesn't at least go for about a week.
Well, that's the funny thing, isn't it? Because if it had gone the official route, the Ad Standards Board, then it would have been, 2-3 weeks. Yeah. And I think they'd have probably been cleared at the end of the process. Yeah. So, you know, they actually made the taste and judgment call.
But also that thing where, I mean, it's also about where do you place that ad? I mean, if you place it in the middle of High Five, okay, fair enough. Yeah. But if you're running it at nighttime in the middle of, I don't know, Modern Family or something, and it's overtly a teddy bear that has no blood in it. Yeah. Well, yeah, no harm, no foul.
Mostly just single dads that watched High Five.
You really have not seen enough Charlie.
Have you? But you think you're anti that ad, though?
I'm not anti that. I just think I can just see where the complaint comes from.
Oh, absolutely.
And see, to me, I just
no. You're obviously just some hard ass who doesn't get upset by things like kill a teddy bear. Come on, man.
But the thing that is very interesting to note here is that, and I've discussed this a lot with a former Nova legendary host in Rosso, in Tim Ross, is that despite the fact that we all think that the world is a far coarser place than it was about 5-10 years ago, and people are watching all sorts of nasty stuff on the internet and saying the rudest possible things on Facebook, there's a really interesting thing where people are quite filthy in private, but in the public space, we seem to be getting a lot more aware of how offensive we could be to other people, hence the reaction to the chaser thing.
Yeah.
So, which actually means, you know, in private, when you come up with an idea of putting a bear in a blender, that's hilarious because you go, oh, it meets all of our sort of bad taste and we're all cool kids and we get it. And then when you put it out into the public sphere, you're a bit shocked that people actually are offended because guess what? People are a little easily offended.
Yeah.
Yes.
And people have the mediums now to respond to their upset much quicker.
Yeah. And there's always a lobby group that is there for a quote to say why they find something offensive. And that
is what journalists are designed to do. Find those lobby groups.
Yeah. Well, it's like unrelated to this, but it's like that's one of my great bugbears of the past 12 months has been that the sort of the outrage machine that is pre-cocked to go off. Yeah.
There's been a great piece written this week in The Punch, actually, by Pembo, has been talking about the journalist friend. There's always, and he lists the various people that used to ring when he was on the Telegraph on a quiet day.
I mean, it's the moment you'd write a story like your editor would always be like, right, come on, phone the Christian lobby group. They'll be hating this abortion story. Quick, get them on the phone.
Yeah, and the thing is that you end up having this completely false argument about outrage, but all you've actually done is just got quotes.
Yeah. We have to push on. Next, Shaggy's in Sydney, and he's on Foursquare. So an intriguing little PR stunt coming up next week. Shaggy, if you remember him, is going to be in Sydney, checking in on Foursquare. This is around his 42nd birthday, and he'll also be tweeting and also be on Facebook. And the idea is that the first people to find him at any given time can come to his birthday party. Scott, this is right your department. This is
right
PR, it's digital, it's Foursquare. You must have exploded with happiness at this one.
A few things. Number one is, look, I love Shaggy. I was tweeting about him just the other week because I was listening to, I'd bought one of his albums again and just listened to him old school stuff. And I would not, even as much as I like the music, as much as I like vodka, I wouldn't walk up to Shaggy and his entourage and go, hey, happy 42nd, 42 below birthday, man. I'd be like, I feel like a wanker right now, so I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to go, Shaggy. look, it's a good idea. My only problem, as I've said before, but Foursquare is your average person who uses Foursquare gets bored after like a 3-month period because you've checked into all the same places. You realise how boring your life actually is.
Foursquare's just one channel, though, don't
you? Yeah, I know. They're using Twitter to push it out there. They're using Facebook as well. That's where the hub's going to be. Look, One Green Bean, you know, they're good at PR. They're good at PRing themselves. It's an interesting idea.
You say that like it's an insult, though. Why is it bad for a PR agency to be good at PRing themselves?
I think sometimes some PR agencies push themselves out there before a campaign's completed. And you know,
yeah, but you can't get coverage after.
I know, but you know what I mean, though. Sometimes, you know, it's just some. Look, I think Cat Tom. I've spoken about Cat Tom's before on the show. I think what they do is really good. Some of the stuff's great. This feels a bit like a regurgitation of one of the previous campaigns. But do you know what they're using? They're using social channels to use a traditional PR campaign, which is good.
Would you bound up to Shaggy and introduce yourself?
No, but I'm a little bit bored with the retro stars being brought out to push stuff. It's just not a particular, like the MC Hammer thing with Xbox, which everyone got incredibly excited about and quick, let's all interview him. It's like, but what are you going to talk to him about? There's actually nothing.
He was actually quite interesting.
Yeah, well,
I went along to the event and that was one of the most interesting events I've been to, actually, because he actually got social media. He got the way. He got online. He spoke about that with such passion. But yeah, on the flip side of that.
But I'm talking about, you know, when they just
Vanilla
go to
Ice as
Vanilla Ice. Or here's David Hasselhoff. Yeah, it's just like,
You know, didn't they bring up Vanilla Ice as well?
I don't think they PR Vanilla Ice. No, it could be. No, you're right. It was One Green Bean.
Yeah,
you
are
right. Yes,
it was like the retro.
They weren't behind the strategy on that one. They PR'd the element because that was alongside the right
Look,
music wrongs.
My plan is to promote. You might promote an alcohol brand. Get Justin Bieber, time up in the middle of the city. Everybody gets to him with bats. There you go.
I'll be there.
Or
42 Below, you know, get them to get everybody to submit a picture. Get 42 Below to send you a personalised bottle with your image on it, a little mini bottle. There you go.
That's a nice idea.
That's 20,000 for strategy, please.
Yeah, I was going to say, on a free podcast. Well done.
which is quite intriguing, actually, because sort of that was Scott being social media guru, which Digital Citizens, of which Scott is one of the committee members, held their version of Pop Idol this week, where it was kind of live pitches, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
In 20 seconds, just explain what the idea was.
So we had I wouldn't say it was Hunt, the social media guru. The idea behind it was that we held an event. We got three people who are good at their jobs and social in that digital space, and we had three organisations who gave them briefs, and they all had to respond to the three briefs. And then at the end of it, somebody was called the winner. Everybody was obviously, we had 100 people in the crowd all watching the event, who were tweeting their opinions. They're going to have massive debates afterwards about strategy versus tactics. We had Paul Alex Gray from product management consultancy Brainmates. Katie Daniels from Demon 2 was there, and Mike Watkins from Social Marketing Agency. Great success. A really good format, and one we'll probably be replicating
next
again.
Next Digital Citizens meeting, have you set a date yet?
I think it's in 5 or 6 weeks. So yeah, just kind of heading towards the Christmas area, so middle of November type thing. And we've got a meeting about it next week. So cool.
Well, next, apparently the future of newspapers is rosy. So once again, we turn to that familiar debate, the future of newspapers. This week, Newspaper Works, which is the marketing body of the newspaper industry, has issued a report letting us know that all's well. Paul, I'll start with you. Are you a daily newspaper reader?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would be if I didn't work in the business. And while I completely understand what is happening to American newspapers, and I completely am aware of the falling apart of some parts of the industry, I still think that they are incredibly healthy, because I think that for more than a few generations of people that are still alive, they are the ultimate record of what happened in the day. And I think that there's a lot of people who in the new media space or the slightly old media space...
Heritage, we're calling it.
Yeah, that. Whatever. I don't know where radio sits, but anyway, God love it. Is that you still ultimately, the mark of true controversy is the front page of the paper, is the and the true mark of celebrity is that they'd write a story about you on page 3, because that is what goes on to inform the rest of the media about what is the agenda today. What do we run at the start of our 6 p.m. news bulletin? What do we talk about at the start of our radio show? So while sales and all the rest of it, that's going to come and go. And then, you know, in the digital space too, I mean, people sit there and they look at news.com.au and they look at SMH and however they monetize it, whatever. But I'm very much in the sky is not falling in when it comes to newspapers.
Scott, you're a print hack of old who took Mr. Murdoch's shilling.
Newspapers still have their place. I think they'll keep going all the time. You know, as you said, there's generations that's the hub for them. Every day that's where they get their news from. You obviously have an agenda Tim. Because,
and what's my agenda?
Because you're new media, you're online only,
hang
and you're
on, I'm not that
constantly
don't,
attacking
don't,
the newspapers.
Don't forget that I'm a shareholder in Encore magazine, know, which is a print title for the print. So
you got defensive, the hack was up quickly.
I have never ever danced on the grave of print newspapers, and I
just pointing out that you know newspapers sometimes fudge their figures.
Yes, but that's the current issue.
Well,
yes,
exactly. But what I love very much though is I love all of the people who and you know furious debates about how new media just kicks the ass of the old media. Yet what do they do on Twitter? They send links of news.com.au stories which appeared in the freaking paper or came from the Wires service.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things I find weird about people on Twitter when they're going about how new media is the way forward and instant news gratification. Well, it's not an instant news gratification of news that's happened yesterday. Yeah. You know, the only time that Twitter becomes really truly alive with what I class as new media is when an incident happens, like a plane crash or something happens, and everybody's talking about the repercussions or what's happening, and that's when it changes.
But maybe I'm a little naive to the media debate. Why is it an either or thing?
It doesn't have to be.
You listen to other media podcasts. It's all sort of like in order for social media to become king, the newspapers must die.
Yes, it becomes bloggers versus journalism, like, doesn't it?
Which is a terrifying thought, though.
Like, surely there is a space for both where they complement and compete rather than just knock each other out. Because guess what, guys? They're not going to go away.
I think it's always been like that. Remember how TV was going to kill radio?
Right. Yeah. It's rubbish.
But the fact is, radio is the ultimate survivor because, digital, it's fantastic. I love, as I've said before, I love my Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo podcast from BBC BBC Radio 3.
And that thing about the radio that they talk about. You know, imagine if we could invent a device that streamed live performance direct to your car for free.
Yeah.
Yes, you'd probably buy it. Well, you've already got it. It's called the freaking radio.
Up next, Why Are You Okay Day is important for the media industry. So in a guest post on Mumbrella, Joe Talcott from News Limited and also chairman of the Australian Association of National Advertisers argued that the importance of Are You OK Day should be recognised for the media and advertising industry. Now, as we record this podcast on Thursday, it is Are You OK Day.
Are you okay, Tim?
Which I'm okay. Thank you very much asking, though. This was created last year by, or very much driven by, Gavin Larkin from The Brand Shop. So it's kind of come out of the industry. Just suicide prevention initiative, the idea, ask a friend, ask a colleague, are they okay? The idea being that just by asking it, you can maybe make things a little bit better. Paul, it strikes me that maybe this is the sort of industry that has some kind of very specific stresses that actually puts people under the sort of pressures that that probably they do need to be asked that question.
Yes, I think it's a very, very, very astute observation. Look, I'm, like everyone else, a little bit bored, a little bit tired of every different day being themed and every different colour of sock to be worn.
Yeah,
and
band in your arm.
Yeah, and it is tiring, but it's that strange thing where invariably, 9 out of 10 of them, when you actually sit and think about them, go, yeah, that deserves some awareness.
Yeah.
You know, like, personally, I would like to have an awareness of Awareness Day, because then we just can put it all in one big place. I'm very happy with that. You can pick the colour for the band. That'll be free. But, the Are You OK thing, I need to declare a slight interest here and there, too, is that I'm not part of it, but John Brogdon, who's very heavily involved in it, is a mate of mine, so it's a pretty bloody important thing. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that isn't that we're sort of supposed to talk about. But, it's okay.
Especially guys. It's a lot harder for guys, I think, to come forward and say that they're feeling depressed and stuff.
Well, and what I like about the name in Are You OK? Is that it turns around and exactly what you two guys did as a joke probably is happening as a joke, which might lead somewhere else all over the country, which is, so, are you OK? Ha, ha, ha. Well, actually, now you mention it. That's cool. That means it's actually, as a message, it works a whole lot better than, Blue Awareness Day. I actually really think that I like the name Are You OK Day. I like it. It's cool.
And do you, have you, you've obviously sort of been in radio for a long time. Mm. Do you think that's one of those industries actually where people put their lives under more pressure than they should, for instance?
Absolutely. I mean, harking back to that very earlier conversation about the year I had on Breakfast, it was an incredibly stressful, incredibly difficult time. And the foibles that make you want to do this in the first place probably don't make you the best candidate for the pressures that come with it. And, when you work in the media as a performer, I mean, imagine literally where you are scrutinized every day, you are criticized every day, and you are critiqued at every moment. And somebody who has no expertise in your field at a wedding comes up to you and says, oh, what about what you did on Tuesday? That was terrible. And that's something that you worked all day and you slaved and you thought and you double-checked and your personal and your name's on the show. How do you not take that personally? How do you not take a Facebook group saying this bloke, this, you know, woman sucks a little more personally? Because
did you drop one of that Facebook group?
I thought, you know, no, if I stay part of it, you know, then it makes me look like a bigger guy.
Now, finally, we'll be talking big changes in breakfast television. So on TV, it's not a shock, but it'll still be a big jab. Adam Boland is leaving Sunrise. You've worked with him, haven't you?
I love him. He's a really, really good guy. I was thinking about how best to eulogise this part of his career. The thing that I like about Adam, and I've known Adam, I've worked in and around Sunrise. I've been the black sheep of the Sunrise family, the odd cousin that sweeps in and out for the best part of 5 or more years, actually.
It's funny, on occasion I pop up there and every now and then someone talks to me as if I'm you.
Really? Oh, fantastic. I'm very sorry.
I'm afraid you've got quite a bad reputation now.
that's great. It's like evil twin, I like it. But which one is the evil twin, people? The thing I like about Adam is that when he put Sunrise together, he turned around and he turned a former finance journalist, a former newsreader, a sports bloke and another newsreader into proper national stars. Because the thing that Adam does back is he backs chemistry. Mm. And I worked with him when we were trying to do a show on 7HD called The Nightcap, which was, a panel-style show with Matthew White and Monique Wright, Jessica Rowe and myself. And the reason he sort of picked those people was because they worked. The reason he's backed me is because he likes the talent, but also he sees how you interact with people. And his incredible skill is being able to back in chemistry and knowing that chemistry and good content then creates celebrity rather than let's get a whole bunch of pre-existing people with profile, shove them in a room and see what happens. Yeah. Well, we've seen that how many times, and it fails every time.
Miserably.
And that's one of Adam's great, great, great skills. And also, he's really so literate in other countries and other formats. Like, he's very aware of what makes Fox and Friends work. You know, what makes the CBS early show work. Mm. And rather than just replicate it, figure out the central value that works and what's the Australian version. And that's a real skill.
It's a really competitive market, though, with, here, with Sunrise versus Today. Do you think they can keep up the same momentum without him?
Yes, I think they do. I think they can.
Is that because the dynamics are already in place?
Yeah, pretty much. Is that basic? But also, don't forget, too, is that, this is no disrespect to Tom Malone, who is an equally very intelligent bloke, is that the central building blocks for the rebirth of the Today show came from trying to emulate Sunrise. So basically, when a fundamental part of your DNA is replicating the other guy, they're always going to be slightly in front, which means, it's theirs to lose, in inverted commas, which I'm sure can be taken out of context and look far more aggressive than they actually are.
Yeah, we'll try and I think you've just given us the quote.
Yeah, please, Jesus, don't.
And have you crossed paths with Michael Pell?
Yes,
successor.
I've worked more closely with him in Weekend Sunrise, where I do the All Stars bit every couple of weeks, every weekend. And he's really good. He's also the thing that I really like about Michael is that Michael is sort of unashamedly populist and will go exactly where he thinks the majority of people are. And I think that's great because you look at the morning show, which could have, just inherited Sunrise's audience for the first couple of months and then eventually just, became as bland as everyone else. It's remained dominant. It hasn't just won. It's remained dominant for the best part of 2 years. And Michael, Larry and Kylie are the team that have made that happen. So that's, he's earned his chops.
Well, I can exclusively reveal that Adam and Michael celebrated their news with the McDonald's. I happened to be in on Sunrise that morning. I was just sort of, you won't call it a green room because you sit just underneath the kind of the escalator.
Yeah.
And they kind of, they sneaked into the lift clutching, the two of them clutching a couple of bags at McDonald's. And then about 20 minutes later, the press release came out.
That's what's great. I've hung out with both and know Adam very well personally. Just lovely, normal. normal, unpretentious blokes, which is cool.
Now, very briefly, because we're probably running way over.
Sorry.
No, it's all good chat, and this is the great thing about podcasts. You can go long, you can go short. the Kerri-Anne Kennelly row.
What nonsense.
Where to begin? Yes.
Well, it's crap. I mean, it's crap, and I'm far more aggro about this than anything else tonight. This is a total nonsense and a complete media obsession about a figure in the media. We have completely lost the point of the story. The point of the story is what happened after the grand final in Melbourne the best part of a week ago.
Yeah.
That's the story. Spider Everett's comments on it are an interesting debate off the side of it.
Yeah.
But Kerri-Anne interviewing the guy talking about the thing that happened is not the story.
And how about the statement about Kerri-Anne interviewing the man who made the comment about the thing that happened?
But that's what I'm saying.
But don't forget, since then, they then made a statement about the statement, withdrawing the first, or trying to pull back the first statement.
Like the dog has caught its tail and is choking on it. Like it's.
I think the dog's halfway through its right leg at the moment.
But this was, you know, to see that as the lead story on the news last night infuriated me.
Yeah.
Because.
It's lazy journalism.
But also, it was just that thing going, like.
It was a quiet news night last night. Don't
tell me about it. I had 45 minutes to fill them. There was a lot of Spider Everett talk, but I deliberately didn't talk about the Kerri-Anne thing because it's a complete distraction from the debate. Like, there are these little moments in time where we have to have a conversation about the way people interact like this, the way footballers deal with women, the way women deal with footballers. And when we get distracted with our own crap, we do a great disservice to the actual debate we could and should be having. And as for the Neil Mitchell stuff today, of Neil Mitchell naming those players, what a disgraceful act of self-promotion, a shameful act of self-promotion. I mean, take footballers out of it, and I'm not some boofy bloke from Triple M who's standing up for footballers and their disrespect of women. But to turn around and name anyone before the police believe there is a case to answer is disgraceful, and it's all about, look at me, and I know what happens is, Neil Mitchell will be on the air for the next 25 years, so he'll sit, and everyone who's blowing up now, he'll sit, and there'll be a list, and slowly one after another, things will, he'll get us. But I find that infuriating, and
I agree completely with you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the rules of journalism is, make sure it's confirmed by the police and all that kind of stuff.
But what's the point then? What's the point of the police investigating anything?
Exactly.
Is that we have to have the independent authority who decides whether or not there's a case to answer,
otherwise,
and you can't preempt it.
Otherwise, the media has judged you an executioner.
Yeah. So
and that person, those people's names are mud if it turns out to be false accusations.
Yeah, and it's like, and so in terms of the outrage, while Kerri-Anne is well and truly off, the Neil Mitchell thing to me even supersedes the Spider Everett element in this, and it is something that we should be incredibly aware of, and too many people in the business, and I've done this at times in my career, but something that is really fundamental to who I am as a performer is the stuff we say matters and people actually hear it, and as soon as you start treating it all just like fodder for a giant machine, it doesn't matter who gets hurt and what gets said, you've lost the plot. And I don't give a stuff how successful you are.
Is there anything that you can think of that you said or did on a broadcast that you actually think, God, if I could have that 2 minutes again,
I don't have a specific instance, but there are plenty of times where you'll have a go at someone because something's in the paper and they're painted as the villain, and you'll go out and just treat them like the villain all day. And sometimes you turn around and go, that's not cool, because if you've ever had anything written about you in a paper, and it might be the local paper, you know that wonderful excitement that when you were a kid and they might have taken a photo of you for your local footy team and you've gone, everyone in the suburb read this. How awesome is this? Well, conversely, when it's bad publicity, everyone in the suburbs read it. So I think you need to be careful about those things. And I don't subscribe. The lesson I try to learn is to not subscribe to the good guy, bad guy idea and crap that goes on in the news.
Apart from Neil Mitchell.
Well, just on this one here, man. Yeah, this specific example just is infuriating because there's no need. Who benefits from this? Yeah, even Neil Mitchell benefits.
I have to admit,
this.
One of the reasons I left journalism was because I felt like sometimes you were hurting normal people.
Correct.
I remember writing a story about a uni lecturer who was looking out of his window at the neighbours putting out the washing, and he was playing with himself.
Yeah.
One of the neighbours filmed him, gave us a video. We used snapshots of it in the paper. It ran page 3 in the Sun. Guy lost his wife, lost his kids, lost his job. You know, maybe the neighbour should have reported him to the police first, you know.
Well, and as you say, like, just, you know, just because we can is actually not a good enough reason. Yeah. And I know that that's why everyone will
tell you.
Yeah, but, you know.
On that incredibly bleak note, I think we better leave it. Thank you very much indeed, Scott, as ever. And to our guest, Paul Murray, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just a reminder, so it's Tuesday through Friday, Sky News.
Yes. I'll go off the top here. It's Monday to Thursday, Sky News, 9:15. You can follow that show on Twitter, PM_live. And on Triple M, it's Paul and Rach, which is Tuesday to Thursday, 4 to 7. That's at Paul and Rach. And as for me personally, for my rantings, including about things like Neil Mitchell, it's Paul_Murray, MMM.
Thank you also to CBS Interactive for use of their studios. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle pip. Well, thanks for listening to that podcast. Just to let you know, there won't be one next week because I'm on my travels. So I'll see you in a fortnight. In the meantime, follow me at mumbrella.com.au.